This episode is brought to you by Radcasters Podcasting School. If you've been considering starting a podcast but you have no idea where to start, I've got the ultimate free podcasting guide for you. Head on over to radcasters.com/ultimate guide. I will send a beautiful PDF ebook on everything you could possibly need to consider when starting a podcast. That's radcasters.com/ultimate guide. Today's interview is with Nikki Leonti. Nikki and my story share some similarities. We have both experienced failure. We've both gone into businesses with the blinkers on, our head in the sand, ignoring all advice and just not really thinking about what could happen if things go wrong, which ultimately they did for both of us. So we talk a little bit about failure. We talk a little bit about online marketing and we talk a little bit about podcasting. This is an interview that has something for everyone. Enjoy. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
For me, that my story really begins. I was pregnant with my first son. And my husband and I just decided to go into the managing rights for a sports centre in Brisbane. And we were so excited. Everyone was telling us not to do it. It's too risky, all that kind of thing that, you know, caring family say. And we're like, no, they don't know what they're talking about. We're doing it. We're doing it. And we did. We put everything pretty much we had into it. And that was in July of 2010. And so my son was born in September that year. We were just going, like working nonstop to get this place up and running because it was a tennis center. So the summer season is really when it really takes off. So you want to do really, really well in the summer because that gets you through the winter because the winter is quite slow. We're working really hard and along comes the summer season and it just rained. It like nonstop rained. We'd never experienced anything like it. And that was the floods in Brisbane in 2011, was that season. So we just got washed out and we had no money left to keep going. So we were expecting this amazing summer season, which is what had happened every other season. And we were getting lawyers to have to get out of the managing rights because we had no money to keep going. So we're having to get loans for all this crap. And it was just so stressful. And I had to go and get a job. So I had to go and get a job full time. My son was only 4 months old. So I had to put him to daycare full time. Wow. And my husband couldn't get any work because in Brisbane, everything had either flooded or just everyone had lost their jobs and houses had been totally flooded. Unless you were a carpenter or something like that, there was just no work about. So we took that opportunity for my husband to go back to uni. So he studied. I worked as a kindergarten teacher, which is what I had been doing before I fell pregnant. And it was horrible. It was horrible to have to get up and have my son at daycare by 7 in the morning and I'd pick him up 3:30 in the afternoon and 5 days a week. And it was just ripped my heart out. It was like I had to leave my heart at that daycare center and it was just horrible. So that went on for a while because we were just like drowning really in the debts that we had and we couldn't afford to live in our own house. We had to rent it out. And my husband finished, so after a full year, he finished studying and he was a teacher, so we ended up doing some country service. So we moved in the middle of nowhere, lived out there with I think there's like 1,200 people. And he was working. I had my son who was just like 1.5 at that time, fell pregnant with my second one. And it was just like, I'm thinking, this is not what life is meant to be. Like we're living in this place. It was 42 degrees most days. Oh. And we couldn't even take my son out to the park because the park was so hot. He couldn't sit on any of the equipment. I just kept thinking to myself, there has to be something more to life than this. We only did 6 months or so out there. And then we moved back to the Sunshine Coast and we were house sitting and all that kind of stuff. We're still renting our house because we still just couldn't afford to move back into it, which was just so I don't know, it's like this is not the dream life. You know, you're meant to buy the house, have the kids, all be happy, and it just wasn't us. So we house-sitted and did all that. And while I were house-sitting, it was over Christmas, I read this amazing book, and I can't even remember what it's called now. It's something like Read My Lips. And it was about these women who had started their own businesses. And they'd started it just out of their passion. And I thought, no way. Like, can you really just do, like, create a business out of thin air? Like, really, can you do that? Only, you know, those really rich people who have inheritance can do that. You know, that was what I thought. So anyway, I started reading more and I started thinking about what my passion would be. And I loved cooking and creating healthy things for kids and doing healthy activities in the classroom. So I started on this little crusade. I'm like, hey, this is going to change the world. I'm going to, you know, make all this money out of this website. So I signed up to B School and I learned everything I could and started following as many people as I could. And I was so excited and then nothing happened. I think I made maybe two sales. So it was like $400 in the whole year. And I'm like, this is crap. You know, all these people are making six figures, some are seven figures. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? And so I kept at it. I kept blogging, but nothing was really coming out of it. So my son, by this time, my second son, was nearly one. So we started thinking, like, I have to get a job now because I, you know, we really needed that. I started doing family daycare. I wanted to be able to just work from home. So that was the best choice for us at the time. It was brilliant. So I had my two boys and I had two other kids and I did 3 days a week. And I started blogging about that because I really, really enjoyed it. I started blogging. The blog got really popular quite quickly because I wasn't trying to do it for money. The first thing that I did was all because I need the money right now. I was desperate, like I really needed that money. And then I did the Start Your Own Family Daycare blog, and it was not because I needed money, because I already had my business. So it was just out of my genuine passion to share with other women that it was possible. You could create your own business. You could work from home, and it can look so different depending on what you're interested in. So I started doing that, and then I wrote an online course. I got to my third one. That everyone loved them. So they were really, it was great to see the excitement and change in people's families by starting up their own family daycare. And it was from then, like, just the tools I learned on how to grow that and how to run the courses and the email marketing, the whole online marketing behind it. I then started getting people asking me, how did you do that? You've only been doing it for 6 months and you've got this whole all these followers and courses and stuff. So I started consulting and then realized that's where my passion was. You know, sometimes I thought, you know, you have to pick something and you just have to stick to it for years. But I realized that every single step, the tennis center, the blog that went nowhere, and then everything was part of that journey to learn and to head me in the right direction. So everything in my journey, I learned something to bring me to where I am now. And now I have full-time income from consulting. I can drop my kids off when they're awake. Like, they're, you know, my eldest is at school now. So I can do that. You know, he was sick the other day and I didn't have to call anybody. I didn't have to ask anyone's permission to be home and take care of him. It was fine. We just did that, you know, and I realized that's what all this hard work and crap has been about to get to this point. You know, there's a lot of people out there painting this pretty picture of starting their home business. And it's like, oh, I went from zero to six figures in 6 months or whatever. And I'm thinking, that's a load of crap. There's no way. Unless you, like, struck gold, you know, there was a journey that you went through, but you're just not disclosing that journey.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's exactly the reason I started this podcast, because I wanted the stories behind. I'm not sure I believe that there's such a thing as overnight success. You know, there's a series of shit that we go through that gets us to the point where we may have moderate or high level of success, but it's definitely not overnight. And I think if you do hit something really huge overnight, then you're often not prepared to be able to make the most of the opportunities that are coming, and then everything kind of crashes and burns. So
absolutely. Yeah.
There's so many parallels in your story and mine, because in my own story, you know, I had the Office Collective, which was my co-working space, which failed, and God, yeah, it was just like hemorrhaging money. And it's so scary because it doesn't piss me off, but sometimes, you know, you see on Facebook people talking about, you know, you just got to stick with it and stick with it and stick with it. But that's very easy to say if you are home-based online business, because you can just stick with it because really your overheads aren't really that great. But when you've got a physical business and you've got to pay rent and staff and blah, 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 and your overheads are crippling and, you know, you're looking at losing your house, then there has to be a point where you are forced to make a decision that you don't necessarily want. So how was that for you? Like, how did you feel during that time of like huge upheaval?
I was stressed. I was, for me, I think it was, I felt ashamed. I always thought I would be a business person. Deep down, I knew I would have something. Like, I knew I had some kind of business gene in me. And so I felt ashamed that we had not taken so many people's advice and that we had just gone and done it and lost so much money. And a lot of people supported us in that, you know, in a family that we could turn to and just say, look, we are stuck. And they did. And, you know, I felt ashamed that we had to do that. I also felt, I guess, disappointed that we had, like, we had to rent our house out. So all of these emotions around it, but I think if we had have kept going, if we had have just tried to stick to it, well, to be honest, we couldn't afford to, but if we had have, I couldn't see it getting any better.
Yeah.
You know, it was just the overheads were too high. The reputation wasn't good before we started there. And the weather is just so up and down, you know, and I mean, to have a flood, like it was a 30-year flood, right in our very first summer season, is just like, oh my God, like we could not have planned for that.
Yeah.
We could not have planned to be rained out the entire season. And I just wish that, you know, I don't wish we had have listened to everyone's advice, because we learned such a good lesson. I think our lessons in that was to really not trust people as quickly as we had. And also to only put in what you've got, like financially. So when I started up my blog, I had $150. That's literally all I had to put into it. And that covered my web hosting. So I couldn't afford to get a designer and someone to create logos. So I learned all that myself. And I was happy to do that because there was no way I was getting a loan to put into my business after what we'd been through. And it was because I learned everything from scratch that I now teach that to people, you know. So it was such a big lesson. If we had have had that money to invest, I may have missed the complete direction of where my business is right now.
Yeah, totally. It's all leading to something, isn't it? But I think sometimes we're so, I don't know, well, me, I have tendencies to do this where I'm like so looking for what that thing is that, you know, you kind of miss what's actually happening. And that's definitely, you know, a big part of my story. Actually, the funny thing is when you were saying about the rain, like the same thing happened to us. Not like my co-working space had a roof, so it wasn't like like the rain was coming in. But my husband was working on the highway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started with a business partner too. So, you know, at that point it was like me, I was going to have to be making half of the costs would be mine. And I knew that that would, I could handle that. My other business could handle that. And then, you know, my husband was out of work because it literally rained for like 9 months. And so we didn't have his good income coming in. And then my business partner, she pulled out very early in the piece due to personal stuff that was going on. And there was no way around that. That had to happen. It was either her, you know, I can't even think about what the alternative would have been. So. Yeah. Yeah, so we had to, you know, really, we couldn't foresee that stuff. And I think sometimes we go into these businesses with like our blinders on, you know. I did. My dad was saying, oh, I don't know if that's like a great business model. And, you know, and he is definitely someone I respect as a businessman. And I was like, bullshit, Dad, I can't fail, you know. And I had absolutely no exit strategy. I had no idea of what the end looked like if things went to shit, because I was too scared to look at that. And I think that's been one of my big lessons, is look at it. Like, you don't have to dwell on the fact that it could all go tits up, but it could go tits up. And what are you going to do when that happens? You know, are you prepared for that?
I think also the all the experiences that we had, we realized that, you know, my family's very strict on, okay, you get a safe job, you get your paycheck, and that's it, you don't have anything to worry about. And that's okay. Yes, the tennis center is a different story, but even so, like, it was very hard to get any job at that point. So I feel like, you know, now I'm relying on myself. I'm relying on my own skill, my own discipline to make this happen. I'm not relying on other people. And that's what I've learned. And that's what I love. You know, it's that we want to go on holiday. Well, I get more clients in and I can, or I launch another course or whatever I want to do. We can make that happen. We're going on a holiday in December. So the whole of December, I won't be working. And that's perfect. You know, I'm planning for that. So I think it's about planning for how you want it to be. And I don't think anything's ever safe, but if it's your business, you're relying on yourself. So
I think a job is probably the least safe thing you can do, really. Like, you are at the mercy of someone else. Somebody else has your entire income in their hands, you know, one person.
Yeah.
And so if you're boss leaves and you get a new boss and they don't like you, and then your life becomes hell because you know, you're working for a prick and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just takes one person above you to, someone working beside you to really make your life hell. And you're being paid by one person. You know, when you're self-employed, you're being paid by many people. So that's actually safer. It's more difficult in the beginning, but absolutely, I think it's definitely safer in the long term. You have a podcast, yeah?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So when did you start that?
So I had been working on my consulting business now for just over 18 months, and I get so many questions in from people. So mostly I work with those who are in their first 3 years of business, so setting up their online marketing strategy. And I was like, I need to find a way, and I hate blogging. Like, I don't care who said, I just can't stand it. I find it so boring, and I just felt the quality of my blogs were just getting worse and worse because I thought I just have to blog.
And that's not a good place to come from, is it? Like, I should do this.
Yeah.
And I find the same, like, blogging, I know why people do it, but for me, it's always just felt like a slog. Like, I blog, who the fuck reads it? Like, it took me literally years of blogging. And I don't think I got the total amount of visits that I've had in downloads in the 8 weeks I've been podcasting. You know, it's like in the 10 years I blogged, I've overstepped that mark in podcasting in 8 weeks. Like, it's just a great medium, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I guess I was sitting down and thinking, okay, how do I like to consume content? You know, and I listen to podcasts, school runs, doing the washing, cleaning, whatever, because it's easy to listen to. And I had always been writing notes of, you know, what I wish this podcast was doing or what I loved about this podcast, and thought, well, maybe I should just bring it all together and answer the questions that people are asking me all the time. So the way I've done my podcast, so it's called 5 Minute Online Marketing, I started it only 3 weeks ago now.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite new. It's really taking you from the beginning all the way through to setting up your own online marketing strategy. So it's been a lot of fun. So it's only 5 to 10 minute episodes. And I find that's the perfect amount to kind of get one tip in that you can actually implement that day or that week and keep going. It's not like, okay, now you have to spend the next couple of hours trying to process it and then plan it out. I just find that is too complex. You know, some of the podcasts I was listening to, forgot you're in the car driving.
Yeah.
You know, or forgot you're doing the washing, or, you know, so I think that's what I've created in this. But I love it. I enjoy just chat. I do. It's just me. I will do interviews down the track, but I wanted to just do bite-sized pieces for the first 8 weeks and then go from there. But it's been good fun. So the results have been amazing, even because people are signing up to my free training that I've put together as well that goes with it. And just hearing the feedback from people, I've even got clients coming, like people are coming to me after hearing my podcast in 3 weeks. I mean, no one ever said that about a blog post.
I know. And it's weird because I've had people who, you know, who I've had on my show and they've worked really hard to, you know, establish an audience. And then after one episode on like sitting here having a chat, they've had people come to them fully qualified, you know, like they haven't had to do anything. They've just turned up and said, I want to buy from you, you know. Yeah. I heard you on Carly's podcast and I want to buy from you. Like that shit doesn't happen. You could write 50 blog posts. I don't know. There's just something about it as a medium that, you know, I just truly dig it. It's so cool.
This is my theory is that there's so much written text and content that you're reading every day that it's like all mushes into the same thing, whereas you don't hear people's voices as much, you know, and you connect with people's voices way more than when they're typing. And especially for me, I'm not great in my copy. Like I, you know, I read some people's copy and I think, oh my God, that was amazing. Like I would give you my money right now. Yeah. For me, I've always found it tricky with writing the way I talk and writing it so that people understand what I'm trying to say. Whereas talking is way more fun and people can really get what you're saying and they get the context of it because of the tone of voice and everything that you, the way you're saying it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, people's attention spans are just getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And I'm not the kind of person that has hours to sit down and read. And reading takes a lot longer.
It does. And you have to just be doing that. Like if you're reading, you can't really be cooking. But yeah, really shouldn't be driving.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't be driving. Absolutely not. Let's talk about online business for a bit and what trends you've seen kind of come and go.
I guess with all online marketing, everything's changing all the time. So we're always trying to find out how to get more people to click on this and get them to opt in and all that kind of thing. But people are catching on quicker to different marketing strategies. So you always have to be in front of that if you want to make it successful. So some of the trends I've seen, you know, when you were leaving the email box on your homepage and saying, sign up to my ebook, you know, people know as soon as they see an email box, they're like, oh, okay, what am I getting into this time? unless it's freaking amazing and exactly what they need to be reading right now, they're way less likely to sign up to it nowadays.
Yeah.
Whereas even just a year ago, it was working really well. And 2-3 years ago, it was like amazing because it was so new. Whereas now we're actually having to sell people like into giving us their email address. So it's no longer, you know, have this beautiful, you know, image on your homepage with the email field. You actually have to sell them into that first. So I guess some of the trends I've noticed and I've been doing as well is you're actually having to provide them some value first to then ask for their email. So an example that some of your listeners could do is do their free video training or just even a quick video or something and then ask them to opt in to go further. So it might be, you might talk about a handout that could, or a template that would really go well with that particular video. So then they opt in. So you actually have to engage them enough in that video to actually get them to opt in. So you have to work harder now. As the business owner, you can't assume that everyone's just going to give you their email address. They may be your ideal client, but they're way more tuned in to how things work. So that, I think that's the biggest starting point, especially for those starting out in business and doing podcasts and things like that. You need to give a lot more value nowadays than you ever have had to before. And I think it has to be value at every point. So once they've signed up to your email, they don't want to just see loads of crap that you wrote a couple of years ago. You've got to keep that stuff updated.
Yeah, because it used to be that you would just like, you know, I had a website many years ago called Think Beautiful. And it was easy to get people on your list back then. And then, you know, and then the newsletter would literally be, this is what happened on the blog this week.
Yes. You know?
But that's not value anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so you really have to be, upping the game, upping the ante.
You really do. And I think you have to give them quality content. You want to be one of those few emails people actually open. Now, I mean, I subscribe to so many emails because I like seeing people's sales funnels, which is just the geeky side of me. It's really stupid. But, you know, I have got this separate email address that I send to those. I'm just kind of seeing how they've got it going. Then I give my real email address to those I'm really interested in listening to. So you want to be one of those people, and you can do that by really being in tune with what your audience wants. You have to realize, don't just put out content that you want to put out necessarily. It needs to be part of that, but also part of what does your audience want? What are they chasing now? Because it could have changed from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You need to be really in tune with that. For me, my audience wants quick. You know, they want things that are quick. They want an action step. They want to be told exactly what to do. You know, in their first 3 years of business, every other man and their dog are telling them, do this, buy that and buy this. And they just want to know, what the hell should I be buying? Like, what should I be signing up to and following? So they just want an action step. They don't want to be sold to constantly. And that's the other mistake a lot of people make. They have these big, beautiful lists. They nurture them for a point and then they kind of drop off the end of the planet, and then they come back because they're launching something. Mm-hmm. And their list is like, we haven't heard from you in ages, and now you're just trying to sell to us. So realize that at the end of each email address is an actual human being who wants a connection, or they sign up to you for a reason, and it's probably to get quality information out. And a lot of people are arguing like, well, how much is too much? I'm giving. Like, how much is too much that they're thinking, well, why would I even pay when
I know? Because I ponder this, you know, I've been in this launch phase myself for Radcasters, and
yeah.
And I've really been stuck on that, you know, how do I get people to, because I have incredible value content to give, but it's like, what is the carrot that they actually want, you know, and what is too much? Like, but then, you know, Denise Duffield Thomas has been on before. She's a good friend of mine, and she wrote a book. The course is very similar to the book, and she gave the book away for free, but she still has thousands of people who do her boot camp. Yep. So is there too much? You know, can you give too much away? Like, yeah, what?
Well, yeah. I think it's really about, you want to give enough away that people will think, wow, I actually would have paid for this. Like, this is great value. She must really know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And you want them to really trust that you know what you're talking about. So at whatever point that is, that's the kind of content value you need to be adding, is when they actually trust that you know what they're talking about and they actually could get some results based on the stuff that you've given them for free. And I think what you charge for is more that accountability side of things. Like, you can give people an ebook, but like what Denise has done, and a lot of people have done, is turn that into a course. People are more likely to implement the course because they're getting their emails every day. They're in these little Facebook groups and they're watching your face every day in videos and whatever. And I think it's that accountability of actually implementing it is what people pay for. What a lot of my clients pay for, you could find for free out in the wilderness on the World Wide Web, but it's going to take you a long time. It could be the wrong stuff. You could waste a lot of time and money doing it. So that's why they pay me, to show them what to do. And I think there's so much free content out there, but it's more what the stuff you charge for is organized. It's simple to implement. They're not having to run everywhere to find it. You know, it's right there and it's delivered well. So,
and they trust you, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can jump on YouTube and learn how to do anything, but how do you know that that's the right information if you don't know the person who is delivering the content? So, you know, there's that aspect. And the other thing is, they have exchanged energy in terms of monetary value to actually learn this content, so that when they've paid for something, they're valuing it more. Like, for example, I created a whole bunch of content on creating awesome audio, and I've shared it with many people over the last few months, whatever it's been. I found that nobody has really used it because I've given it to them for free. You know, they might have watched it, but I don't think they've valued it. So when I put all that content together and I put a charge on it, then they tend to value it and they actually get more out of it. Like, it's an interesting psychology, isn't it? Like, you can get that shit for free, but in order to really value it, you want to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for me, so I got this free yoga pass for Christmas. I won this prize. I was like, oh my, it was worth like a, you know, $1,200 or something. I was like, oh my God, I've been wanting one of these for ages. I've been like four times and I've had it since Christmas. So what, 8 months now. And I kind of think, oh my God, it's because I didn't pay for it.
Yeah.
If I'd been paying for that, I'd be like, oh, come on, just get there at least once a week. Like, you could make that happen. So, and it's the same with it. So the free content I give, like in my podcasts and in my blog posts and videos and all that kind of stuff, people could go away and implement their whole online marketing strategy. They literally could, based on what I've given them. But it's here, it's there, and they've not paid for it. There's no accountability. There's no one saying, oh, how are you going with that? You know, have you actually done that sales page yet? It'll just sit in the back of their cupboard. But yeah, I know there's plenty of courses I've been given for free to test, like as a beta tester and stuff. I haven't even opened them. I think that is also a really good lesson on pricing. It's not necessarily about the content value, but how much people need to invest into it to implement it and what they'll get out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what I've learned a lot from Denise. I haven't even bought any of her courses because the stuff I've got from her, and I've done other money things as well with other people, but I trust her. If she was doing a course that I really wanted to be doing, I'd buy it right now because all the content she's given me
is really good value.
Is really good value, and I've also been able to get results from it. So I think there's no like black and white of how much is too much content. It's a really hard one.
Yeah, it is.
And also, I guess for me, I do it as well. Like the free stuff that I have online, because people could implement their strategy from a lot of the free stuff if they took the time and the discipline to do it themselves, I think that's great. Like, I would actually be happy because I wish I could have been like that.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that if advice I'd been given in the blog posts I'd been reading and all that when I started, if I'd implemented even half that stuff, I would have been doing really well. So,
yeah.
Good on them.
Totally. Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch. Biggest fear.
My biggest fear is that I'll get to a point where, you know, my business is just going so well and then I'll shit myself that how can I keep it going like that?
Yeah.
You know, even now I've got to like quite a big milestone for my business. And last week, I had 2 days written off because I was just like panicking and anxious because I'm thinking, how can I keep it at this level? You know, I was getting really anxious about it. That's my biggest fear, is not being able to continue to grow at you know, moving forward to each level. So I have big dreams for my business, and I know I can achieve them, but it's that fear of what if it doesn't keep going, or what if things change so much that I can't keep up with it, you know? That is my biggest fear. But then again, I will get through it. It's just I have to keep calming myself down. But that's my biggest fear.
Yeah. I relate to that one too, because I think not so much these days, I think, because like Killer Copy is, you know, over a decade old now. But definitely in those first 5 years, I found myself constantly questioning, can I keep performing?
Yeah.
You know, will it continue? And, you know, at those points is generally when something really fucked happens. You know, like I remember I was questioning, oh God, you know, I'm not working hard enough. That's one of my things. Like I'm not working hard enough. And then it turns to shit because, you know, I get a huge bill from the tax office that I hadn't planned for. Or one time, you know, I was at that point where things were going really, really, really well. And I was questioning whether it was sustainable. And then my biggest client just disappeared overnight. And with that went about $500 a day from my business.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't come back from this. But yeah. I actually did. Like that year, I hit exactly the same. That's my thing, is that I've just been plateaued for a very long time. So I hit a certain amount each year, but there isn't huge growth. And now I'm ready for huge growth, you know. So look out, world. I'm coming for you.
Excellent.
So what are you on that? I guess that's like one of my big struggles. So what do you struggle with in your business?
My biggest struggle is actually remembering to work on my business and not in it. Like I've always hear people talking about it, and at first I'm like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah.
Now I'm at that level. I really get it. I really, really get it. And it was only last night I was sitting down thinking, okay, I've got to designate time each week to work on my business. I'm so busy with clients that I forget about the direction for my business. You know, I at this stage I don't need to promote because I have more than enough work, which is a great situation. But also, what about in the future? I need to make sure I'm still promoting myself and getting out there, because you know it only takes a few clients to get to the point that they wanted to work with me, and that's fine. And then I've got to be looking for more work, you know. And I kind of think I don't want that. And also the direction for my business, I went from purely online programs to now purely one-on-one, and now I'm moving to a combination. So looking at that, making sure that that gets implemented and not just focusing on current client work, but looking on the direction for my business. So that's my struggle, is to make sure I do that and not continue to see the urgency of clients' work over the urgency of my own direction for my business.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
That's the thing I struggle with. So I'm just trying to schedule it in, really.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
What would you say have been your biggest lessons?
Oh my God. Okay. Biggest lessons have, I guess the thing I've learned the most is that business is the most intense professional development journey in the world. You don't need to pay Tony Robbins and all those people. You just need to start a business.
Yeah.
And you will learn so much about yourself. So I've learned a lot about who I am and what I really want in life, and that I actually am different. I'm not the normal type of person, which I always tried to be when I was younger. I always tried to fit in. Now I've learned it's so much better not to fit in. Life is way more fun if you're not fitting in and doing what you want to do. And I just trust myself. I trust that, you know, I've got two kids and, you know, we have living expenses and all this stuff that we want to do. I trust that I can provide that, whereas I didn't do that before. So that's a huge lesson I've learned, is that I'm capable. I'm more than capable to run this business, be a great mum and a wife. And yeah, so those are the kind of main lessons I've learned. And they've just, you know, business and personal life, you know, everyone's like, oh, you got to balance it. There's no balance. Like for me, my business is my life. There's no like black and white. I try and make sure when I'm with my kids, I'm with them, but I'll always be thinking, like I'm always thinking, oh, that would be a cool photo for my website, or, you know, as walking along the beach, oh, I could put that behind a quote, you know, all that kind of stuff is constantly in my head. So I just play it by ear and just go with it. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, totally, totally. And you're right, it is. It's an absolute journey of self-discovery, that's for sure. Because everything comes up, you know, and life in a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
But enjoyable too, otherwise we wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
More enjoyable than the alternative anyway.
Well, I think it's really made me see how I want my life to be, you know, and how it could be. When I was going to uni, I had this vision, I'm going to be a teacher, I'm going to have kids, I'm going to have the holidays with the kids, and that's really the only time you get to have fun. I'm thinking, oh, that sounds like crap, you know. I don't really want to be doing it like that. You know, my husband, he has his own business as well. He does real estate. And Tuesdays, we both work from home, and Luke is at school. Alex goes to family daycare, and we get the, like, we go out for lunch. You know, this is great fun. Like, if we were working a normal life, I guess, it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it gives you a certain level of freedom, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so failure, yeah, how do you feel about it? What does it look like, and how does it show up?
I guess, I mean, besides the major, like, business failure / lessons, you know, back then I just felt embarrassed and ashamed of that. Now I feel proud that we actually gave it a go and learned from it, and that didn't stop us from from having our own business. So, like, now, I mean, I don't really see it as failure so much anymore. You know, if an online marketing strategy doesn't work, I'm like, all right, let's move on to something else. How else could we do it? And I'm just getting so much better at that. The better at that I become, the better my business becomes.
Yeah.
So when you can embrace that failure or see it more as a lesson, and it doesn't stop me. I used to be scared of failing because it would stop me from trying things. But I realized that failure, it's never as bad as you think it's going to be.
No.
Like, you know, it's just, I just try new things now. And if I didn't do that, I really wouldn't have a business.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing. Like, I kind of look at failure as in, like, you know, you're walking down the street and you accidentally trip over a piece of concrete, you know, and it's slightly embarrassing, but you're going to live. You know, and then you'll probably look down at the ground just to make sure the next step is, you know, even footing. It's not, you know, just because something doesn't work, it doesn't mean that it's, you know, you're failing. It's just something that didn't work, you know. And I find it really sad that people do let the fear of failure hold them back, because it's one of the most common things. You know, everybody, not everybody, but most people I've spoken to have some level of fear of failure, you know, and it does hold them back, understandably. But I think when you have had a big failure, like you and I have had, then you realize it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, it can be slightly embarrassing, but the benefits outweigh, you know, the negatives. It's tough when you're in there.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, from that particular experience, I've learned now how to deal with it. How, you know, my husband and I actually grew stronger by going through that. And that's helped us, you know, especially having kids is really tough on a marriage. But going through that at the same time was like horrendous, but we stuck to it and we saw how each other copes through situations like that. And we're really proud of how we handled it. So, yeah, it's just has been a huge, you know, I'm thankful. I'm thankful that we did that. If we hadn't have gone through that, we wouldn't be where we are now. We might still be living in Brisbane, but now we get to live on the Sunshine Coast. So it's pretty
win-win.
Good.
Yeah. We all have like a recurring voice in our head that says negative stuff. What does your, you know, evil bitch inside say again and again and again?
This actually has nothing to do with business. For me, it's more about my weight. My business side of things, when it's going really well, my weight goes up. When my business isn't going too well, my weight goes down.
Yeah.
It's just this like weird thing. So for me, that's an issue.
I hear you. I hear you 100% on that. You know, like, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and it's bloody hard to get rid of sometimes, you know, like, because I think there's only so much that you can give 100% to at all times.
Yeah.
And if your business is getting 100%, or your kids are getting 100%, or your diet and exercise is getting 100%, there's other bits that are going to fall off because there is no balance, you know. And so, yeah, I totally hear you.
So that's what she's talking about in my head.
Okay, so moving on to more positive ground. What do you what have been some like highlights? What is the highlight of what you are doing now?
Well, the highlights is seeing some of my clients realize they can actually have a business, that they can start a business and start making income from it, which they didn't think was really that possible before. That's obviously why I keep going, because I want to see more mums in particular, but I work with a lot of guys. You know, see, there's an alternative to the life that we're told we should be living. The other highlight is more personal in that I'm going to Mexico next month, which I'm so excited about, and it's for my business, and my business paid for it. And, you know, I just think, oh my God, you know, how does, you know, that's just so exciting to be able to do that. That's a, that I'm really grateful for. So that's a massive highlight. And no, I should stop with two highlights.
We could go all day.
Yeah, there's so many awesome things, I guess, that's been happening. And mostly it's just to have that freedom and seeing other people have the freedom as well. Yeah.
And last question, I think. Yes. What do you do to show yourself that, you know, you're the shit? Do you have like a self-care or a self-love little routine thing?
Yes, I do. And I notice if I don't do it, everything, you know, is harder through the day. So I get up at 5, and yeah, it's harder. I have to actually set an alarm clock in winter. But I get up at 5. I do some oil pulling.
Yeah. Where you put the coconut oil in your mouth and you swish it around for 10 to 15 minutes. And
yes,
yeah,
I do that. So I've been doing that for a couple of years now, but it's great. And then I journal while I'm doing that. And then I go for a big walk and do meditation. And then I come back, and that's when my kids and my husband start kind of waking up, do breakfast and stuff. And I feel like I can give them everything. Like, that, you know, that hour and a half in the morning before everyone wakes up, it gives me that chance to charge myself. I'm such an introvert. My dream idea of a holiday is to just read a book on the beach and have no one near me. So to have that time every morning just on my own, it charges me up. So I feel like I can face the day. I am ready to, you know, have the onslaught of children and school runs and lunches and all that kind of thing. So for me, that really is what keeps me going, gives me so much energy, just to have that in the morning, that me time. I need that, because there's no way as a mum you could find that again for the rest of the day. My youngest doesn't go to bed till 9:30, which is a freaking nightmare. So, you know, it's like from the moment they wake up to the moment we go to bed, it's, you know, it's constant. So that's why I get up early. It's hard, but it's what charges me.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
I have put together a special opt-in for all your listeners, which is really exciting, because I love this interview and kind of having this chat with you. So I've put it together to show your audience like a template of how to use their podcast as lead generation to grow their list and to get people to their website and their great content, or even if you're launching something. So if they head to nikkileonti.com/Carly, cool. So that's nikkileonti.com/Carly, they'll be able to grab it there and they'll get it sent straight to their email inbox. They'll get the whole template of how I've done it and how they can do it as well, so they can actually make it useful for their podcasts and things like that if they're doing that. If they're not doing podcasts, they can just see how everything kind of works at the back end of when we're talking about growing our lists and all that kind of cool stuff.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper, and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
My best tips are really three tips on how to really optimize your online marketing. So, and this can apply to anyone doing marketing. It doesn't have to be online. But really get to know who you're talking to. So realize that that's a person on the other end of an email address, on the other end of your website, looking through your website. Realize that they're a person. The second tip is to work out what do they really come to you for? So why, how can you really help them? And the third one is about really making sure you're putting a real element of yourself into everything that you're doing. So do what really lights you up as well, and not just what everyone is telling you should do. So that's my three tips.
Cool. Love it.
Cool.
Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out. This episode is brought to you by Radcasters Podcasting School. If you've been considering starting a podcast but you have no idea where to start, I've got the ultimate free podcasting guide for you. Head on over to radcasters.com/ultimate guide. I will send a beautiful PDF ebook on everything you could possibly need to consider when starting a podcast. That's radcasters.com/ultimate guide.